couple of years ago, I coined the phrase pump and pal. And boy, did he ever live up to that billing yesterday. If you think you have resistance on your charts, you need new charts because there isn't any. We're going to talk about Micron igniting the AI trade. Once again, that's on fire. Earnings, Chewy being Chewy, 835, Cameron Dawson. She'll be joining us to discuss the Fed's latest actions. It's a Thursday, pre-market prep. Let's get started.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution style and strategies.
All right, quick rundown of the futures and commodities. S&P's finishing up at strong close. We're higher by 23 and a half handles, 53.10 and a quarter. The buck up 15 cents over 103 at 103.20. Bonds up 3/4 of a point at 119 and 17, 30 seconds. Crude backing off 50 cents, 80.77. Gold ripping over 2,200, up 48.60 at 2,209.60. Silver following suit in the 25 handle, up 52 cents at 25.62. And Bitcoin, just like everything else, catches a bid. So we've been talking about those 8 o'clock prints driving Triple D crazy. And he's been doing his homework, and he figured it out, or maybe figured it out. What do you got?
Yeah, we have no confirmation, didn't speak to anybody about this, but just putting two and two together. So you see at 8 o'clock, all these prints dump on from FINRA, all these small odd lots dumping on from FINRA on all the stocks. You just saw it on NVIDIA. You're still seeing it like 9:16 trading, 9:17 trading, even though nothing is changing in the overall market. So obviously these are trades that have previously occurred. What I believe, I'm fairly confident of this. I don't know if we can get confirmation or not, but you know, right now you're seeing 915.95, 915.91. What these are, I believe.
I just saw it. Yep.
You see how it's changing right now? Those prints are from the overnight Robinhood session, the overnight Thinkorswim session, the overnight Interactive Brokers session. So the tape is not open at those times. There's no consolidated tape for this overnight, you know, 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. trading because the exchanges are physically closed. But there are trades occurring and all trades have to hit the consolidated tape. So whatever reason, they've decided at 8 o'clock, we start dumping all these trades that happened overnight onto the tape. So that is what I believe is here. I don't know like how we can get confirmation on that. If we can ask Robinhood, if that's when they're doing, maybe somebody at Benzinga can reach out to get confirmation on that. But I believe that is what is happening because we just started overnight trading in the last couple of years. And, you know, we're seeing all these tapes recently and it's expanded. Interactive Brokers has it now. I believe Thinkorswim has it. So we're just at a point here where while these trades happen overnight, they've got to be reported. The tape is closed at midnight. There's no tape to dump them onto. So what do? 8 a.m., they just turn around, they dump them all. So they just like take, you know, your algo, dump on all these prints. So these were trades that happened overnight in these stocks. That's why when you're looking at NVIDIA right now, trading 9/13/24 for an odd lot, that's not occurring right now. That was a trade that happened sometime in the overnight session. It would be nice if, you know, the regulators could figure out a better way. And again, our software providers not to change the last price because NVIDIA just didn't tick down to 9/12, folks. It just didn't tick down to 9/14. That was last night. It is currently not even trading at all. Trading at 920.69. So if anybody has confirmation of that, let us know. But that is what I believe is occurring. I think you're seeing the overnight trade dumps. And it's all odd lots, and it makes sense because Robinhood's small traders. So you're seeing like one share, three shares, five shares. It kind of makes sense. And that's why all these trades are away from the market. So I believe that is what is occurring.
And you actually, the reason it kind of hit you is because occasionally you do trades overnight on that, right?
And what I saw was a few of my trades, like, and it could have been coincidental because I was trading some active stuff. But I'm like, well, some of those could have been my trades because I'm like, that's where I priced at. I trade on Interactive Brokers and that's those prices that were showing up. And that's why I'm thinking that's what it is. I'm going to reach out to Interactive Brokers. Because obviously I trade there and maybe, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, find out for me if that is true. I don't have a Robinhood account. But again, maybe Benzinga can reach out to Robinhood and see if that's what is happening. So Jonathan's saying, like for instance, Jonathan, I'll just show his tweet here. You know, Jonathan's saying TradeView has massive up and downs at 8 a.m. These are not trades that are occurring. This is what we're talking about here, folks. These are not trades that are happening right now. These are trades that happen from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. and need to be reported. So for whatever reason, they've decided at 8 o'clock, we just start dumping all these trades onto the consolidated tape. And it just makes the consolidated tape a mess. And what it's doing is changing your last. But it's not really changing. Certain software, you know, now knows about this. Like I'm on, you know, Ready. My Ready is not changing my last with all these trades, Joel. So where, you know, you might see it bounce up and down. Yeah. I don't see my last changing here. So at certain time, you know, well, actually that's not true, because when you get a full lot, then it does change. When you get 100 shares, the odd lots never change the last. So actually it did just tick. So I just noticed that it wasn't, but it is. So
what about doing this at 4 a.m.? I mean, right? Why not do this at 4? I mean,
nobody's paying attention to it. I agree, Joel. Why do it at 8 a.m.? It's screwing everything up. Why not dump them all on there at 4 a.m.? So let's talk to Robinhood and figure out a better time. We know some regulators listen to the show. Let's figure out a better time to trade dump. Not at 8 a.m. when everybody's sitting at their desk like, what just happened to NVIDIA? It just went down to 9:14. Now it's at 9:21. Now it's at 9:14. Look at all the money being made. It's not. These are trades that have previously occurred. We said that before. We knew they were earlier trades, but I never identified.
We didn't know when. Yeah.
I've identified it now. It just makes sense. You know, sometimes just common sense and logic, it just makes sense. So
you know what
that's
this
what
means,
I believe.
24-hour trading, Dennis. I mean, this is what we're coming to. I mean, there really is. You are never going to sleep again when we go to 24-hour markets. But let's go, man. Let's talk Powell. Yeah. Holy mackerel. I mean, he delivered once again, basically inflation, no inflation, whatever. Rates are going down. Yeah, there was a couple caveats there. Didn't get to listen to the whole thing. So I'll let you take away the comments. But the end result, I mean, he delivered again. He's exactly what the investors wanted. He delivered. That was my take.
Yeah. So I was nervous. I thought maybe he's going to talk about, you know, the data points from last week, talk about, you know, maybe inflation creeping back in, talk about maybe kicking the can down the road. None of that. He's full on, whether, you know, and it could even be political. We're in an election year. There's a lot of things happening here. But he wasn't concerned about inflation creeping back in. He says, we're staying with the three. As soon as they were saying they still see three rate cuts this year, it's this blast off, because everybody was thinking, well, we're kicking down to September. Maybe we're only going to get one or two. Well, once they said three, it's like, oh, they're going in June. They're going to go. They're probably going to go in June. And they're probably going to go again in September. And they're probably going to go again. Three. They outlined it. Three cuts. So that just was buy stocks, blast off. IWM blasted off like fiercely, like never before. Solar stocks blasted off, which you knew. Everything that's interest rate sensitive is going to go. But they bought everything. They just came in with their buying shoes on. The AI trade lit back up. Bitcoin lit up. Gold ran up. Everything. Everything wants lower rates. And they basically got what their wish. They got their wish from Powell. You know, with him obviously talking about lowering rates sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did mention that, you know, the data a little bit recently, but he was like, look at the rate of decline that we had. And it was a little bit of a bump of road. Maybe not so much, you know, I mean, whatever, we get to three, may or get the cuts later in the year. But he really seemed to, you know, take off the table like raising rates, right? And I mean, there hasn't been much talk of that, but you know, if he would have given a little sign like, whoo man, those numbers were hot last month, if that happens again, we're gonna have to reevaluate. Nothing like that. I mean, nothing whatsoever. No. So it did give a bid to those stocks you mentioned, the ones that need money. IWM, I saw that briefly, that had a nice pullback to 200 on Monday and Tuesday, and then boom, it's right back.
It was
up.
Nervousness ahead of the Fed, and I was nervous too, because you had those inflation data points both last week, Joel. You were here for that,
yeah.
And they were a little bit nervous. They're like, "Well, is inflation creeping back in? Because if inflation's creeping back in, the Fed may kick the can, may not even cut. Then it may go to September or may go even farther than that. He took all that off the table. He literally lit up the market. He just caused inflation, honestly. Like, he has no, there's no guts there. There's no, like, there's just, like, again, maybe it's a political agenda. I don't know. But he was even dovish in his commentary. We're going to get AB on here in a minute. AB's been hiding in the background. He's just finishing up something. He's going to be here. But he was watching it. There is no dovishness even in his commentary, really. Like, he, or hawkishness in his commentary. He was full on a dove. So, you know, we get two hot data points. Not that they're super hot. And we said they weren't that crazy. But, you know, inflation creeping back in. You could argue inflation creeping back in. He's not having it. He's on the agenda. He's beaten inflation. He's ringing, you know, whatever it is, you know, taking his victory lap here again, which he did back in December. And maybe
he's out of
December because he took the victory lap in December. And you know what, folks? He took it again yesterday. So with that being said, how do you be bearish in this market? It's why, you know, too, I was like, I'm not selling, you know, again, you're telling me, you know, lots of people saying, oh, sell your NVIDIA, sell your SMCI. Eventually we're going to crash on all these stocks. Where are you going with the money? And I did sell my SMCI, but where are you going with the money? I wish I was still long all my stocks. I wish I hadn't sold less any SMCI. Maybe I'm going to rebuy my AMD because my AMD, I sold around 180. It's right 184. It's popped back up. So I'm already missing it here this morning. But I think there's just this market. If he's going to be a full-on dove, despite, you know, a couple of upticks in inflation, how do you be bearish?
All right. So there's good days to report. And there's bad days to report. And then there's absolutely fantastic days to report. That was yesterday. Micron Technology adjusted EPS 42 cents beats an estimate of a 25 cent loss. Man, I don't know. Is there any? There has to be a correction in there or something. No. And beat on the sales 5.82, 5.34. We got a new AI company. Not new. It's been around for a while. What a move in Micron. Busting out to new old-time highs, Triple D.
Yeah, this is unbelievable stock. And it's cyclical. We know this business is cyclical. Well, right now, they're moving back up to the top of the cycle because the earnings were fantastic. Like you said, Joel, what a day to report. They were looking for stuff to buy. Even if Micron would miss, the dip would probably get bought. But they were expected to lose money. So this quarter, they're expected to lose 25 cents. They actually made 42 cents. So not even like a little surprise. No, they made like quite a bit of money. They're seeing Q3. They were only supposed to make 20 cents. They're seeing it 38 to 52. So again, the cycle up. What they're saying, AI running the show. And when they started saying and talking about AI running the show, NVIDIA, blast off mode. SMCI, blast off mode. AMD blast off mode. So if you're looking at the moves and wondering, you know, well, Micron here lighting, you know, fire under the chips, it's lighting a fire under the AI stocks here too. Because if anybody thought, you know, that AI wasn't real, well, Micron just said, it's real, folks. It's real.
They expect next-gen AI PC units to grow and become a meaningful portion of the total PC units in calendar 2025, baby. What a time to mention AI.
What a time to be alive.
I'll just say, you know, I just said there's no resistance. I'll give you resistance. Someone wants out a little bit at 114 here. You've popped up there a few times, right to 114 even, and then 1391, 1398. We're trading way above the straddle price too. So that's the only level I can give you. The top of yesterday's range, whew, I don't know if we'll ever see that. Never's a long time, though. 96.68 is the top of yesterday's range. So Micron blowing it away. Let's take a look at the NVIDIA chart that had just been kind of consolidating. Boom, that gets a nice bump. Next daily high in NVIDIA. Not too far from there. Folks, keep an eye on 924.05. I saw AMD pulling back the next few days. Figure your 50% retracement on this one, folks. I'm not going to do it because we don't have time, but 227 down to 174. Get back in that $200 area, maybe find some resistance. SMCI catching a bid on that too.
And I had the offering when you were away, Joel. The offering price, which we talked about, was 875. It did get down to 855, so it did take it up. But we talked about the potential floor down there. Well, they turned around, they bought it back up above there, and they haven't really looked back. And now it's up here at 923. So it's just, you know, green light, go for stocks, at least here this morning. Again, you know, I never one to chase. You know, people are like, oh, I got to go buy stocks. I don't get them. I mean, we just had a big move, folks. So will there be, you know, a data point that brings us back down? Will there be another opportunity? There's always another opportunity. I never chase. But I think I'm moving back. Like, I was thinking it was moving more to sell the rip, which it was for a few days. I think I'm moving back to buy the dip because you know why? I can't fight the Fed.
Good point here by Jay Rice. I mean, talking about chasing, putting those two comments together. If you chase Dell, you know, you got ran over, right?
Because if you're chasing a lot of these things, yeah. Is Dell interesting at 111, 112? It sure is. If the valuation isn't that crazy. I think it's rounded. I think we had 5 days of rounding and consolidation. I'd be in Dell. Like, again, we just came from 104. Could you get it at 107, 108, 109? Maybe. I think you do. I think it's a good one. Let's just look at, you know, the details. Go to your trusty Benzinga Pro here. D-E-L-L. The P-E on this puppy is low. It's always been under a market multiple. The P-E on Dell forward P-E, Joel, is 14.
I think I remember you.
It was down to 10. I was talking about this thing at like 80, 90 before when it was trading P-E of 11 and 12. And I was like, it's under a market multiple. Now they're talking about working with NVIDIA and doing other things. Michael Dell, obviously good friends, he said it, with the CEO from NVIDIA here. I mean, I don't know. There's some stuff to like here on Dell. I think this is a pullback to be bought on Dell.
Everyone, you know what? Everyone's going to need a new computer, right? With AI chips, right? Everyone, you know, buy your Dell, buy your computers because...
That's a good point, too.
Yeah. Yep. You're going
to... And other things. They're probably going to do other things. Like, I mean, this isn't just, you know, I think, you know, Dell, we think of them as just a PC company, but they're moving into other things as well. So I don't know. I mean, you can look, you know, where do you want to put your money? Let's just take big picture here. You're thinking, you know, next 5 years, where do you want to put your money? Where are the growth industries? Do you want to invest in the banks? Do you want to invest? I'm like, maybe, but I still think AI is going to continue to explode, like being going up like AI. Are you just going to chase NVIDIA these times? There may be other plays here too. So I don't just think it's going to be an NVIDIA, NASA market, NVIDIA, AMD, SMCI, Broadcom, ARM, you know, if you're whatever you want for your other A. I don't think it's just going to be those stocks. It's going to continue to expand. And Microsoft's going to be a big part of it as well. But, you know, maybe you're looking at companies like Dell, maybe Intel, you know, they're getting the big contracts from the government. Everybody hates the stock. It gets the pop yesterday and then just immediately comes back down anyways. They absolutely hate Intel right now. Maybe there's a play here for Intel. I'm not long it. I'm thinking about it. You know, it's down here at 42. It's always been the dog, though, and always finds a way to disappoint. And I've been in it a couple of times before. I know you're still in there, Joel.
Yeah.
And it's been a perennial dog for you, too. And I mean, when you buy enough dogs in your portfolio, you usually end up with fleas. That's why, you know, it's usually better to buy strength as opposed to buying weakness. But I mean, there's, you know, an argument here that a lot of these stocks could be a lot higher, you know, over the course of the next few years.
With all those comments that you just made, gotta go to Chewy. Gotta go to the Chewy report when you're talking about all the dogs here. And it's funny because I mentioned to Lisa, you know, because we get Chewy packages, I mean, almost, you know, every day. And I'm like, can't you get all that stuff on Amazon, you know, a little bit cheaper? And it's more the prescription stuff. Like, my dog is on a lot of drugs. It's real old. And Chewy is where you can get a lot of this prescription stuff. But Chewy beats 18 cents versus a 4 cent loss. Beat on sales, $2.83 billion versus $2.794. Not bad guidance. They popped it, but Chewy being Chewy, they just sold the rip in this thing once again. So down 88 cents after trading up to $19.95. Dennis, did you get anything? Were you watching this one at all?
No,
on that
it's
pop?
Not even on my radar.
It's a dog.
You know,
okay.
Yeah, it's not even on my radar. I mean, we've got ships taking off, other things blasting off here. Why in the hell do I want to look at Chewy? You know, like, we can talk it because, you know, there's some people who are interested here, but this stock's got fleas. And we've talked about this stock having fleas for a very long time. It's just valuation's too high, online dog food store. You know, maybe they eventually figure it out and start expanding into other things, but there's only so much money in dog food. And I think you're seeing that. So again, we're in a buy the dip market here right now, though. Could Chewy, it's got great support down at 16. Could it bounce out of there? Sure. It could. Is this one that I'm like, oh yeah, Chewy, this is what I want to own for the next 5 years of my long-term portfolio? No.
I will note it is at yesterday's low, 1678. You're just kind of hanging out here. So if you kind of sweated it out, that move to almost 20. The last three lows have been in the $16 handle, between 16 and a quarter and 1682. So if the bulls are going to show up here in Chewy, it's going to be off the open at these levels. We might as well talk about an interest rate sensitive stock, and that would be KB Homes, trading up $1.32. Let me pull up the report for KB Homes as we speak. The home builders with their earnings, 176 versus 157. Slight beat on the sales. Momentum in demand has continued into Q2. So just think what happens to these stocks when we do get an interest rate cut. Is this an all-time high? All-time high. KB Homes trading up $1.32.
It isn't going to hurt these stocks. I mean, and there's, another point here too. Let's bring AB. AB just put his headset on here. I think he's ready in the background here. I've been watching AB. Are you ready? Is he ready? He's coming in.
He was supposed to just hop on when he was ready.
I know. We told him to hop in. He's working on a newsletter. It's got to be a pretty darn good newsletter. It took you 20 minutes.
That was a safe observation. No, usually I prepare the morning newsletter like the afternoon, evening before. I'm moving right now and all this stuff. And last night I laid down on my couch and just like passed out at 8 p.m. I think I was exhausted. So I was like scrambling this morning, but we got the newsletter done. Lots to talk about, which makes it easier, to pick content to include in there between Micron's earnings, which you guys already talked about, Reddit's IPO and everything. But KB Homes, good report, all-time highs. Nothing slowing down anything, it seems like, right now. No. Everything's ripping.
No, is good. Everything is awesome. Everything, we like everything here. So, but again, okay. So let's just talk about the Fed here once again here and bring AB into the conversation. I mean, Powell, somewhat dovish yesterday, talking about three cuts this year, which is probably more than most people were thinking. And so we could talk and, we can poo-poo a lot of these interest rate sensitive stocks that have been held down. The home builders are not one of them. But if interest rates actually do start going down, some of these stocks that have been lagging could actually start to come out of it. I mean, TAN had a pretty good day yesterday popping up, which should be expected. Sometimes it's just common sense. First Solar had a pretty good day yesterday. So if we are actually going to get the three cuts, if we are actually going to, start to go into a rate lowering cycle instead of the rate hikes. And again, TLT is still skeptical. It's rallied a bit, but didn't blast off into orbit, which is somewhat surprising. So you just got to keep an eye on that. TLT starts to go back down, this trade all fails. But as long as TLT can stay above 92 and start creeping higher here, you could take a shot on some of these other stocks. There will be rallies. Now, Spinner pointing out, stocks like Crocs, there has been broad-based. There has been other stocks besides AI going up. I mean, well, IWM is sitting near, 52-week highs as well, not too far away from those highs we set a few days ago. So, and it's not an AI thing. It's an interest rate thing. So there's two trades happening right now. AI still remains hot. But now all of a sudden, Powell just lit a fire under everything that's interest rate sensitive. So does this equal just buy? AB, thoughts about one, what Powell was saying yesterday, and then two, what are you buying?
Well, first of all, talking about Powell yesterday, I did watch it. And I made I took a stand on the show. I said I thought he was going to be more hawkish than dovish. I was dead wrong. Luckily, I switched my mind before he even came on at 2:30 because the Fed announced with its announcement at 2 p.m. that there would still be three rate cuts, which I was like, okay, that's the big thing people are going to be watching for. That's what I was worried about was, you said, Dennis, Powell kicking the can down the road saying, oh, we might not get three. Clearly, that wasn't the case. So that's what, one thing I've learned from a lot of really good traders is be okay with being wrong and being able to change your mind quickly. So once that announcement came out at 2 p.m., Powell did say some things that I expected him. He still said we need more evidence that inflation's coming back down to 2%. So he wasn't really hawkish, but he also wasn't, saying everything's, dandelions and roses or, and he did. But then he did also talk about the big other thing that he mentioned that was more on the dovish side was he said there's been an unexpected weakening in the labor market, which could require a policy response. So
where is he seeing that data? Where is that coming from?
I don't know, honestly, because we've seen some layoffs, I guess, but I guess maybe the hiring hasn't been as great. I don't know. Like unemployment.
Does he have data that we don't? Because, and chat, you can help us out here too. I don't see that data he's talking about, an unexpected weakening in the labor market, because, you know, the jobs data ticked, you know? Is he just looking? And I don't even remember.
Yeah.
A little schmidgen. Like a schmidgen. Is that what he's grabbing onto? A schmidgen of, you know, jobs? It didn't even get, you know, major headlines here. And we're going to get jobless claims here in 5 minutes, SCTY. Thank you very much. So, you know, maybe we're going to get some more data. And maybe that's the data point we're going to get here today, Joel, is the unexpected weakening. Maybe he's got those numbers. Yeah. Maybe we're going to get that data point right now.
Well, yeah, and he might have, the phrasing of it might have been more like, if we see, you know, if we see the weakness in the labor market increase, you know, but either way, for him to talk about it in that, you know, framing, I think the market really liked, because it showed that he would be comfortable with cutting rates if necessary, even if inflation doesn't get back to that 2% target rate. So either way, I mean, he was definitely, you know, you don't have to hear me say, you can just look at the chart. He was way more dovish than hawkish. I was wrong on that. But yeah, again, we'll watch this labor data today, see, you know, what's going on. But I mean, man, everything was ripping. We talked about Bitcoin yesterday. Bitcoin got down to 63,000, came right back to 67. So, yeah, I mean, if you bought the dip on anything yesterday, you were rewarded.
What do they want from this jobless number? Do we have, so we got jobless claims coming. Do they want the softer numbers to go with, like, you know, the Fed is like, okay, they're really done here now? Or do softer numbers, you know, mean what it really means is that, oh, well, maybe economy is slowing down a little bit here. Are we like, no, full on, like, it's good no matter what? Are we back to that market here?
Yeah.
Good basically. No matter. Joel says we're good no matter what.
Yeah. Good no matter what.
You know, heads I win. Close your eyes and blah, bye.
Heads I win, tails you lose. I mean, the unemployment rate, I think he's talking about the
Bears.
Was it the manufacturing? Yeah, he wanted to give a little hope to the Bears out there. Though he really didn't, they got absolutely buried. But I think maybe was it in that? Did we have a little bit weaker than manufacturing data? Maybe last week, maybe a little bit of a slowdown there. I mean, also, I kind of from the conversation thing I read afterwards. I mean, he's still the supply chain, right? They're still working through COVID. So if you don't have the supplies for the workers to do what they need to do, maybe that will have an impact on the employment situation. But still at, you know, historically low levels for the the unemployment rate, not where we were before, but maybe he was looking at the manufacturing. Do you
maybe
have those
looking at today's data point we're gonna get in 2 minutes?
Oh yeah, he had today's data point.
I think they can get a preview.
We are. So on the initial jobless claims, the expectation is for 213,000 jobless claims. That would be slightly higher than the previous of 209,000. But again, this isn't, I mean, you know, usually those Friday jobs reports with the non-farm payrolls, those are the ones that really move markets. But, you know, if this was a huge miss or huge gain to either side, it definitely has the potential to move markets. We'll also get the Philadelphia Fed manufacturing survey, but you know, nothing I don't think will be, you know, groundbreaking in these announcements here in 2 minutes, but I'll make sure we have those numbers.
Do I have to go wide or not?
Maybe. I think CNBC screwed something up, not to throw anyone else under the bus, but here, let me share this real quick, because I was trying to find the exact comments real quick to pull up for that that Powell said, and they posted this YouTube video. There's no way this is right. It says Fed Chair Powell, substantial weakness in the labor market would be a reason to raise rates again. I think they meant to say cut rates again, because that's certainly not what he said yesterday.
It's substantial weakness in the labor market.
Yeah, let's raise. Yeah.
Let's bury this labor for. We got substantial weakness in the labor. We better raise rates a little bit more, because we don't want that labor force coming back whatsoever.
Yeah, we don't want any of those people working ever again. If they got laid off, they got laid off for a reason. So
fun of CNBC.
Yeah, that's the type of market commentary you'll get from CNBC. If you want better, then you got to come
watch
here.
Watch our stuff.
Low bar, high bar. All right, you just threw someone under the bus at CNBC. Trading at the highs of the pre-market session, that's 53.15.75. We are at 53.14. So that's it. There's nothing in here. We're going to have the jobless claims coming up.
Looks like zero movement off of this.
Yeah.
Billy Fed, cute, and initial jobless claims coming up here.
210 versus 212 estimate, so basically in line there, slightly lighter. But like I said, I mean, this number isn't the one the market cares about the most when it comes to labor data. Continuing jobless claims came in at slightly hotter. I mean, nothing really, moving the markets too much here. Have you guys talked about
snooze fest?
Have you guys talked about Apple yet?
No. Let's go to Apple before we bring on Cameron Dawson here at 8:35. Yeah. Apple, so building that, getting that rally. Apple, Google teaming up when I'm gone. What's up? What's all that about? That seems to be really good for Google. But give us that Apple news.
Yeah. So Apple, which we had talked about, you know, while you were out, Joel, had been getting some life, but now a new Department of Justice, you know, report is coming in, hurting the stock this morning. Apple to be hit with new Justice Department lawsuit over allegations it unfairly blocked rivals from iPhone features. So, I mean, Apple's kind of had this, I guess, tendency or reputation over the past few years for stepping on the throats of other competitors. I mean, they did this thing with Spotify where they raised the price that Spotify would have to charge customers, only so that customers would have a cheaper option in Apple Music, trying to kind of squeeze out Spotify. And, you know, we've seen both in the United States and the EU more so willing to kind of, you know, come after Apple and say, hey, you guys can't do this, and hit them with this antitrust stuff. So this is more just bad news for Apple when it really, you know, started to kind of heat up again. It's still trading higher than it was before yesterday, because I think it closed up like 1.5% yesterday. It's trading down about 0.8% today. So it's not like it's giving up all those gains. But still, if you were buying Apple yesterday thinking here's the time we're turning around, not great news this morning.
I mean, here's the DOJ kicking them while they're down. Apple just can't seem to get out of its own way here. Here's the stock finally showing some life from a technical perspective, bouncing. They get the love from NVIDIA. You know, even Kramer had on last night talking about NVIDIA and Vision Pro working together. All that, you know, been driving the stock higher here the last couple of days. And then this happens. And then the stock gets hit. Is it a dip buying opportunity? Usually the DOJ stuff is. Because we've heard it with
there you
Google.
Go.
It usually when you get a 2 or 3 point sell-off on these stocks, on antitrust concerns, they are usually always a buying opportunity. But the problem is Apple's just been so dang out of favor. I do think the dip gets bought, though, and it already has, actually.
So let's do a quick survey on how the DOJ's been doing on their antitrust lawsuits. Okay, have they won any? I mean, it just seems like they keep coming up with these different things, and they just seem to be going nowhere. With that being said, you do have Apple trading down $1.38 here. Fill the gap that you had from, had a nice rally going. When I would look at this one, we moved up, let's call it 169 to what, 10-point move. You know, let's see what happens. If this comes back down to the 173, 174 area, that'd be a little bit retracement of the recent move. But right now, they hit it down $1.41 and off the pre-market low. And how long do these lawsuits, I mean, to go through the cycle, to finally have a decision? And, you know, what if they fine them like, $1 billion, you know? Oh, they'll just go to the till at a couple of their stores and take out the day's receipts and they'll pay the fine. So, I mean, I don't know. Also, I mean, it's something so hard to prove. But right now, you did get a dip. So right now, based on that, that close yesterday, pretty important. It actually closed on the exact high tick at 178.67. So there's your resistance. And if you're looking to buy the dip here, I'd be looking at the 174 area. That's just about halfway of that recent 10-point rally. So there's a look at Apple. Want to go to our guest now, AB?
AB's on mute. He never does that. He muted himself.
AB,
You're taking a page out of Joel's notes here. Get off mute.
I'm sorry. A little mute trick there. Yeah, let's go ahead and bring on Cameron Dawson. We got her hanging out backstage. Without further ado, let's give Cameron our very special pre-market prep welcome and catch up with her when we get back.
All right, Cameron Dawson, CFA, Chief Investment Officer at New Edge Wealth. Cameron, how you doing today?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you guys?
Oh, I mean, how could we be any better? You got a ripping market and you got a dovish Fed. So let's just get right to it and party on, Wayne. That was I love the way you bring things in. I mean, what is going to disrupt this party, Cameron?
Yeah, the phrase that came to mind or all day yesterday, I was just quoting to myself Wayne's World, because nice. Truly it was a spark of party on. And really, it's this moment of being able to have our cake and eat it too, which is that you can have a friendly Fed and yet still have growth that is strong and robust and supports things like risk assets in equities as well as within credit, because we've seen credit spreads continue to tighten, equity valuations continue to go up, which is a function of the fact that growth expectations continue to rise. Now, in past times, higher growth expectations and higher inflation expectations, which we saw rise significantly yesterday as well, would have been bad news from the Fed. But Powell struck a very dovish tone yesterday. It was a tone of, hey, we can continue to forecast the fact that we could cut rates or trim rates lower, even if growth is reaccelerating, even if inflation is above our target. And that's, of course, why markets looked at all of this and effectively, to quote the great Wayne's World, went schwing.
I mean, so how do you come in here? Like, what's the bears got to chew on here? Because this is really tough for the bears. Because it's been, this market, and it looked like, and I was a little bit nervous on those inflation data points from last week, a couple just ticks higher here. I'm like, does that make Powell, a little more cautious? It doesn't look like he wants to be cautious here, though. And if you're a bear, how do you fight the Fed?
Yeah, I think that to your point is fighting the Fed has never really worked. What's interesting is that the Fed, even though they have been much tighter than what markets have expected, there have been other bigger things that have driven markets. I don't think that we can get complacent on inflation. There are signs of things like gasoline prices, which have gone up significantly over the last month and a half. They're up about 12%. That does contribute to higher headline inflation. You're getting to the point now where you saw this massive decrease in gas prices over the second half of last year. That's one of the key things that drove this immaculate disinflation that the Fed has really been celebrating. But that has since reversed. And so I think the question is, do easier financial conditions, do some of these signs of cyclical reacceleration result in higher inflation to the point where the Fed can't write off like they did yesterday? They said, we're not worried about January and February inflation data. We think they're just exceptions. We think we're still on the path to this disinflation. Do we get more evidence that that's going to be further challenged? And that still remains to be seen. But I think that that's one of the areas that I wouldn't want to be complacent about, because if you don't get that support, then June's certainly off the table. And then we're talking about much more like two rate cuts through the rest of the year. I think the important thing to remember is that we don't get another update to the SEP until June, or the dot plot until June, which just means that until then, we'll be kind of oscillating around kind of these bets as to whether or not the Fed is thinking it needs to be slightly more hawkish.
Well, but Cameron, I mean, go ahead, AB.
I was just going to say, you must have been watching pre-market prep yesterday, because we did talk a lot about those gas prices and that being a potential inflation driver. If we do get inflation coming down and the Fed, starts to cut like it's planning to three times later this year, what sectors do you think are the winners? Is it the hot names just get hotter, or is it the beaten down names you want to go in and start buying?
Yeah, well, I think that there's an important point there to acknowledge that we've seen such a huge re-rating in valuations that there is some aspect of an easier Fed reflected in current prices. If you look at tech stocks trading back up to 2021 peaks, even things like industrials trading at valuations that are well above their 2020 peaks or pre-pandemic peaks, this would all suggest that there is some aspect of easier policy that is being contemplated or anticipated by markets. Now, I would say that the important point is that if the Fed continues to be easier to markets, it would support this idea of cyclicality continuing to rebound, which to your point, Aaron, would say, hey, I could look at the industrials, the materials, some of these areas, even the banks that have lagged, because you're starting to see a cyclical recovery in the economy, which is important because we are seeing PMIs, we think, start to rebound. We think February was probably a head fake. And we're as we move forward, we likely continue to see this rebound in cyclical activity, which in the short term would be supportive of those cyclical sectors very much so.
I mean, we did get the higher inflation data, and that could persist. But if you look at like the growth forecasts, you know, moving forward, they're higher. If you look at retail sales, they're higher. I mean, it's such a muted picture here. If you're still talking about increasing growth, I mean, should rate cuts even be on the table here? What's it going to take?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question, Joel. And I think that these two charts are probably the most underappreciated charts in the market and may be some of the most important charts to watch over the next 6 to 12 months. What they show is consensus GDP forecasts for 2023 on the left side and 2024 on the right side. And what you can see is that 2022's weak markets were weak for a big reason is that you were cutting estimates so very much for growth. You were cutting estimates from 2% all the way down to 0.25% for 2023 growth over the course of 2022. No wonder markets were weak. No wonder risk assets like equities were weak. You had credit spreads widen out. But of course, that turned in 23. You started to raise estimates, not just for 23, but also for 2024. This has been a big underpinning as to why you can see risk assets do so well. The big question is, now that you have reset expectations from 0.5% effectively in the summer of last year to 2.1% today for 2024 estimates, how much further up can you go? You have started to see economic surprises start to roll over. You've seen some retail sales data come in a little bit weaker. But if this rolls over, that would be the challenge for risk assets. The thing is, we're not seeing evidence of it yet, which just suggests that there still is this favorable growth backdrop. But I would watch these consensus forecasts very, very closely, because when they turn, it usually is coincident with a turn in sentiment and maybe a fraying in some risk appetite.
You mentioned the Mirthmobile here, and the equity market says the consumer is fine, but aren't we kind of getting some conflicting signals from the consumer?
Yeah, the Mirthmobile is certainly discretionary stocks outperforming staples. This is one of my favorite ratios, mostly on an equal weight basis. So you're trying to control for the outside impact of names like Tesla and Amazon. And what it shows you is that when discretionary is outperforming staples, it is typically coincident with rising forecasts for household consumption. And that's exactly what we have seen. Discretionary outperforms staples, household consumption forecasts have gone up. But to your point, Joel, we have started to see some signs of a slowing in actual retail sales data. And that's where we could see an interesting divergence in the data. If retail sales continue to be squishy, will you continue to see consensus revise up forecasts for household consumption? Maybe not. So we don't have enough evidence of it yet, but it's something to watch. For now, the equity market says we're well in the Mirthmobile. We don't have to worry about the consumer. But if this ratio turns, that's when we would get more concerned about forward expectations of declining growth. So respect this trend, respect that discretionary outperform staples, but watch it closely.
Cameron, why? I mean, from like a macro perspective, I mean, we're talking about the market at all-time highs. Retail sales are doing okay for now. I mean, you know, there might be some weakening there, as you pointed out. But why do you think so many people out there don't feel like we're in a good economy right now?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a few things there. The first one is that we live in a world of second derivatives. We live in a world of rates of change, meaning that when inflation slows, financial markets love it. It means that inflation is a rate of change, and the rate of change slowing does show that there is improvement on inflation. However, us as humans live in a world of levels, meaning that as inflation slowing, prices are still going up. It still is hard when you see grocery prices. So when we look at this economy, what we've continuously seen really since middle of 2021 is a big divergence between hard data, so what people are actually doing, and soft data, sentiment, what they're telling us that they're doing. That divergence has persisted for some time and is likely to continue to persist as consumers are weighed down in their emotion by higher inflation and higher prices. However, in reality, they are continuing to spend. A very similar story for businesses as well.
I know that's what's been so fascinating is people like will say the economy is, you know, like people's feelings are saying one thing and then their wallets are saying another because they're still going out and spending. But certainly, like you said, I mean, we're still dealing with those higher prices. We talked about gas as well. Joel, you want to hop in here with a question?
Yeah, just about tech. She's a robo babe. The tech just keeps going, but there is some divergence in tech. Should we just stick with what got us here or try and pick up some of the scraps?
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting underlying dynamic with tech, which is that overall the sector reads very strong, but it is almost entirely driven by the semis. No surprise, because we know what's going on within the semiconductor space. But if you look at tech hardware, which is primarily Apple, that has been very weak. Software as well has been weak. You've seen some relative weakness in names, of course, like Adobe and other software names. So semis are really holding the candle here for all of tech. If semis roll over, that could be a sign that some of this tech dominance could stall. But as of right now, tech is in a very distinct uptrend on both an absolute and a relative basis. We have seen tech sell off in short periods of time. It sells off back to trend. It holds its trend really well. So until we see a negative volatility, something that signals that we could have a trend change, deterioration in the relative performance, or a big down day that shows that there is a change in this desire for technology as well as in semis, you know, respecting this trend is important. But I would say is that you have to be selective within tech mostly and keep an eye on those relative performance trends because there's a lot of broken charts within tech, despite the fact that the overall sector remains in such a strong uptrend.
Cameron, can the rally continue in the mega cap AI trade like Nvidia? And we know Microsoft has obviously been strong. Is valuation scare you here on some of these stocks? And I know you're not, you know, usually talking specifics, but I mean, the AI trade, can this continue?
Usually when you think that it's too late, it's still going to keep going, right? And it's like, it's a great Walter Diemer quote, which is that, you know, that parabolic trends parabolic moves tend to last a lot longer than you expect. But when they end, they don't end by going sideways, they end by reversing straight down. Look, I'd say that in a world where earnings estimates are moving so rapidly, something like Nvidia, where you have upside surprises of 100 or upside revisions of 150%, 200% to earnings, valuations are less relevant. However, Nvidia is really the exception. If you look at a name like Microsoft, it's up a lot, but its earnings estimates for 2024 and 2025 are only up by 8% in the last year. Meaning for all of the talk of Copilot and all of the talk of AI, analysts have revised their estimates up, but by a mere 8%, which just means that it's been all valuation expansion. That becomes more of a challenge if the earnings don't materialize or if the liquidity market backdrop environment turns against the market in a way that valuations that are stretched become an issue. So it's one of those things where you say you have to respect the momentum. I know I keep saying it, but in noting that if positioning is crowded, sentiments extended and valuations are elevated, those are risks, but they're more medium-term risks because they aren't catalysts in and of themselves. And they are very poor timing tools. And that's where balancing those things, keeping them in the back of your mind, but also being very aware that momentum is strong and that there's still this clamoring for people to get in.
Cameron, we're all waiting for like the bad news to like rock the markets, you know, with interest rates and the regional banks. And we get the bad news with NYCB and market just shrugs it off once again here. Just a little talk before we let you go here. Let's talk about how the market's been reacting to these regional banking headlines. And if you talk about, you know, a little bit of a lagging, boring sector, where's the AI in financials? But let's talk about them right now. The banks, are they turning up?
Yeah, I mean, certainly on a relative basis, the chart looks a heck of a lot better. You're seeing absolute performance turn and be much stronger. And this is all despite those weaker headlines. We have a few things going on within banks that are notable. Of course, we have the re-steepening of the yield curve, which tends to be supportive for banks and their net interest income. But we also have a re-livening of capital markets, IPO markets opening up, credit markets becoming more active as people are returning back to being issuing more bonds. All of this is supportive of the idea that you're seeing a cyclical recovery in cyclical parts of the market. Really important to remember, banks are cyclical. And so the end result is that we are seeing some firming in this performance. And I do think that's an indication of that cyclical reacceleration that's happening. And I think the other thing to note is that despite all the NYCB troubles, you never saw bank CDS spreads, credit default swaps, really blow out in any way. It was just sort of a shrug, which tells you that this market isn't concerned about contagion risk and sees that as more of a one-off for now.
One of the kind of, I guess, lagging sectors this year has been small caps. IWM had a great day yesterday, closing up about 2% on the Fed news. Do you expect small caps to start heating up here?
I think one of the most impressive things to start this year is how small caps have interacted with their 50-day moving average. Every time that there's been a bit of a sell-off, they pull back to their 50-day and just bounce right back. Relative, not so much. They're continuing to lag the market. You know, the thing about small caps to remember is that they are more levered, they have more exposure to floating rate debt, and they're only about 40% of the small cap Russell 2000 is unprofitable. So they need a good economy and they need lower interest rates. So of course, yesterday, no wonder they rally. They get the lower interest rate signal from the Fed and they get the economy as the Fed rate increases GDP estimates. The phrase I've been using for small caps is we're here for a good time, not for a long time. Eventually, this economy will slow down or interest rates will remain sticky and high. And that could be a challenge for small caps that have that balance sheet and have that profitability backdrop. So I think you have to remain very selective within small caps. Clearly, there is episodes of positioning chases as well as dominance and things like SMCI, which certainly helps small caps to begin the year. But I think that overall, you know, the small cap trend has improved. There is momentum behind it. But just be very, very aware that if economic growth were to weaken, a lot of these gains could be very quickly reversed, just like we've seen multiple times over the past couple of years.
Well, we've been on the line with Cameron Dawson from NewEdge. Cameron, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, guys, we've got about 7 minutes left of the show. If you have anything, any stocks you want to chat about, a fun stat that I saw this morning, well, I don't know how fun it is, but we've been talking about what's going to slow the market down. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know that during the March Madness tournament, which starts today, employers are expected to lose $17 billion in lost productivity from people watching the games at work and whatnot? So I don't know. It seems like nothing else will slow the market down.
Is why March is always seasonally weak.
It's also
usually, even Ryan Dietrich talked about, you get into this, you know, February, and then March is usually March, April can be a little bit seasonally weak, and then we lift up again after that. Maybe it's March Madness fall. Maybe they should cancel the tourney, Joel. What do you think? How's Michigan looking?
They're not in it.
They're not even in.
Did you not know that, Dennis?
I didn't know. I don't even watch.
You just look at his face. Joel doesn't
watch football. I watch hockey. I don't watch a lot of basketball.
And to make matters,
I will flip it on, but I don't follow it.
And to make matters worse for Michigan fans, they threw Michigan State in there as like a 9 seed when they didn't deserve that at all. And you know, we can move on from that. But it also, another fact that I saw, it's also the number one time of the year for men to get vasectomies, because then they can just miss work and sit on their couch for, you know, 3 days and watch basketball.
Oh gosh. It's fun to watch, but
excuse to lay on the couch and watch basketball. I mean, if, you know, now the reason the funny look then is Michigan fired their coach.
Yeah, Juwan Howard got the boot.
Yeah,
is that what happened? Is that the reason?
Yeah.
When is the last time they weren't in it?
A few years ago, but they had their worst season in like maybe ever, or 50 years ago. Yeah. They were one of the few teams this year that had more football wins than basketball wins, because the basketball team.
Really? Well, you did complain. I should have known that, because you complained about the basketball team all year. But the football team was so good. I mean, it was so good.
Yeah, no, I know. That's
it. More than made up for
it. I got my natty. I got my natty, man. That's it. That's it. I mean, it's like I might as well just retire from life. I mean, I'm not going to worry. I'm going to keep my basketball tickets. We've had the family discussion. We're keeping them at least one more year. But people don't want to hear about sports and March Madness. But let's go. Let's get a few more equities here. S&P's just hanging up near the highs of the session. The other thing I just wanted to mention, too, is we talk about the Quadwich turn, right? Mm-hmm. And is it, you know, is it going to be a big reversal or just a continuation of the trend? And boy, oh boy, you chopped around Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And now, boom, I mean, you made a new all-time high yesterday by over 40 handles. So there no quad witch turn here, at least for the March. We'll see if the rally can
again
continue.
Remember, and again, I think we need to give perspective here. We can get all bullish, but I think, you know, you want to pull back here now. I don't know if you just want to chase today, because we had a big move here just now. You know, even IWM, it took us 7-8 days to go from 210 to 200, and we're getting it all back in a day, basically. So, you know, like two-thirds of it back. So just be somewhat cautious. Just flat out, okay, yeah, Powell chasing. I mean, chasing has never really been a way. And again, people pointing out PDD, you know, yesterday, which we talked on the show, we're like, well, it's opening into major resistance. We talked about the 150. I used your technical levels, Joel. You know,
oh,
the levels that jump right
there.
Out at you.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
This was a level, a huge level, and we talked about it. And, you know, like, it held. And you know what? It never even touched that in the regular session. It was trading 151 in the pre-market, which is right at resistance, and it pulled back. And I mean, holy crap, it gave it all back. I did not see that happening.
Before we pull some tickers out of the chat, we should mention, unless you guys already talked about this when I was hanging out backstage, but Reddit's IPO is going live today. Targeted range of $31 to $34 a share. Should be
a little bit wild
this afternoon, maybe around 1 p.m. Eastern time. I mean, Reddit's been talking about IPO for years and years. Finally going on the market today. This should get a lot of buzz on social media, on different chat boards, and even on Reddit itself. So that will be one of the big headlines of the day. Again, expected to go live this afternoon at around $31, $34 a share. We talked about Corpina on Monday, talked about how this was 5 times oversubscribed and there was a lot of demand for the stock that, you know, compared to the supply. So I wouldn't be surprised if this thing, you know, takes off on the IPO, but always be cautious when buying a stock on its IPO. I mean, all you have to do is go back and look at Coinbase, Robinhood, some of these other charts and see how they trade after that IPO rally. So again, if Reddit starts rallying today, you know, you can trade it, do whatever you want. I'm just saying, be cautious.
I never trade them on day one. I might look at, you know, the effects on other social media stocks will be interesting here.
Yes,
we bring another one in. We've always had the Meta, obviously trading Snapchat, Pinterest. We had Twitter for a long time. It's off the board. So now we bring another one in here. Did some of the money move from those stocks into here? I'm asking the chat as well, you know, like, because you would naturally think, you know, that people are interested in social media. Meta's had, you know, been on just a tear. Snapchat's sitting at its lows. It just can't get out of the dust here. And Pinterest is at its lows too. What does that mean for Reddit? Asking you guys, asking the chat. I don't know. I never really looked at the history on, you know, social media stocks, another one coming in, but could some money move from those stocks into Reddit? It's a question mark.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of divergence in these stocks. I mean, the ones like Meta that have other things going on can do well. Snapchat, when Twitter was publicly traded, the ones that are fully reliant on just growing users and more advertising haven't really done that great over time. So I'd be very tentative on Reddit. Let's see. We've got ticker time. Oh, Chris wants to talk about Paramount. We haven't talked about Paramount in a while. Oh, we had two people asking for Paramount. I think we also had some news. Let me pull up Paramount.
Yeah, yesterday was rumors. Again, there's been rumors that, you know, there's going to be a deal here eventually. Those rumors got ignited yesterday. You can grab the headline if you want there. AB stock was up significantly there. You know what's interesting is the divergence here between Para and Para A. You know, these two stocks have just, you know, like, I used to trade them years ago, and they used to always trade around the same price. Now PARAA is double the price of PARA. And the only difference is the voting power.
The voting
again,
rights,
PARA
right?
was always held by Redstone there. He held most of them tight. So, you know, it was always liquidity issues in the PARAA. But holy, you know, that PARAA is almost twice the price of PARA. Same company, just no voting wow. rights.
Boy, oh boy, I don't know how you said that so many times, but...
without slipping up. Tongue twisters.
Yeah, yeah, I would buy comp. This was Viacom A and Viacom B, right?
Yeah, and then it went to P. And the media companies all have these double classes because they want to keep the voting rights close. They've always have. And, you know, and obviously, you know, so they have the second class of shares that don't have the voting rights, but they participate, same dividend, same everything. I don't know. It's just interesting to me that it's diverged so much because I have, like, history trading these stocks. You know, I used to do, before high-frequency trading came and monopolized everything, I used to do the arb between the PARA and PARAA. You know, at one point in time, I remember back in 2004.
That's all you did.
I was 5% of the volume on the other one every day. I averaged about 5% of the volume just myself. And then there was like a few other traders, you know, trading that thing too. So like if you were buying or selling that back in like 2004, there's a 1 in 20 chance you bought or sold it from me. So like I traded a lot of stock on that back in the day. I don't trade anymore because high frequency trading pushed me out of the space. It just got it more efficient. You can't compete. You can't get filled on your orders on the bid and the offer. I used to sit in there, capture the spreads, but we know that's been monopolized by the Citadels of the world. So it's just, you know, not for, you know, it's hard to do those arbitrage trades as much as like, you know, on an intraday basis. But I just don't understand why $24 to 12 when they used to trade around the same price.
Yeah, the headline, Richard threw it in the chat, Apollo Global Management offered $11 billion for Paramount Global's film studio. And I mean, I'm seeing, I don't know if the valuations get all messed up with the different stocks, but I'm seeing a market cap for Para Class B at $7.5 billion. So clear to see why that stock jumped up more than 10% yesterday. That'll be a storyline to watch today to see if Paramount gives up some of those gains. But all right, guys, it is 9:02 a.m. Thank you to everyone who tuned in to pre-market prep this morning. Thank you to Cameron Dawson over from New Edge for joining us today. Always great to have Cameron on. Live trading will start after this. Joel, Dennis, any final thoughts as we head into the open?
I think it's going to be a choppy day. I don't expect markets to just like continue to rip higher. It was a big rip yesterday, so maybe a little bit of backing and filling, but the buy the dip mentality is back. So I think we've got to move in. If you're getting some dips on maybe some stocks that you like, I think you're striking because I do think we're going higher here, even in the short term. I think I'm not chasing today, but I'm sitting here with my buy the dip hat on.
All right, Micron, that's going to be your big leader here, obviously up nearly $16. If you're trading Micron today, keep an eye. 114 has been the pre-market high, and it's tested it a couple times, so that's your leader. S&P's just hanging out near the highs of the pre-market session, so if I tried to give you resistance there, I wouldn't be doing you any favors, but always like to see strong continuation through that pre-market high during the first few minutes of the session. And tomorrow, 8:35, we'll be talking retail with Ryan Craver at Commerce Canal. It's always, we're through the retail season. He's going to give us an update from the last quarter earnings. So great to be back with you all. It's Thursday. Let's get fired up. I got some brackets to do. I have not done any brackets. I've been in such a mental funk with Michigan, but I think I'm just going to go Big Ten heavy. You know, go with my heart, not with my brain. And go with Purdue.
Who do you think's going to win the whole thing?
Purdue.
They call him Purdue, but Purdue. Man, you got a guy 7-4 You got to do something with
them. Well, there's
two-time player. Who are you taking, AD?
There's a precedent. There's a precedent for that, Joel, because Purdue lost in the first round last year to Fairleigh Dickinson. A few years ago, Virginia lost as a one seed in the very first round, and then the next year came back and won the tournament. I'm taking Auburn to win it all. I'm taking the team from the SEC. I watched them play against Missouri this year a couple times. They're a good team. I'm taking Auburn just because I think fewer people will be taking Auburn compared to UConn and some of the other teams. But
Bruce Pearl. You got to love Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl.
All right, guys. We'll be back tomorrow, 8 a.m. See you guys there.